The following podcast may contain spoilers, strong language, graphic violence, and nudity. Viewer discretion is advised. Hope there's a good movie on this plane.
Four guys and a movie. Four guys and a movie. Don't I, Brian Robbins, you're reviewing movies for the show. Four guys and a movie.
Hello, everyone. It is 4 a.m. again, and that means it's time for the 4 a.m. podcast, where me and my friends watch movies from our past and see how well they hold up to us to today. I am your co-pilot, as always, Tony. Joined with me is...
Brian.
20 minutes of Steven Seagal.
Abu Jofa.
That's racist.
All right. Well... fasten your seatbelts, folks, because today we watched Executive Decision from 1996.
Played out in real time.
Yeah. Well, I think this is pretty telling. Their taglines were, fasten your seatbelts was one. Mm-hmm. The other one was, 5 miles above the Earth, an elite team of 6 men must make an air-to-air transfer in order to save 400 lives on board a 747 and 40 miles below.
That's a tagline?
Yeah, that's a synopsis. Yeah, exactly.
What? 40 miles below? Yeah.
Basically, everyone below the plane is in trouble, too, is the point.
Well, 40 miles, like, was in space?
Sorry, 40 million below.
Okay. Like, 40 miles?
I shortened it because it was too damn long.
747s are more powerful every year.
Yeah, so this was Executive Decision, also known as Critical Decision in Belgium. 1996, directed by Stuart Bard, who did U.S. Marshals and Star Trek Nemesis. Okay. And that's it.
Sure.
Although he also did, I guess, producing and possible writing credits on such little movies as Superman, The Omen, Lady Hawk, Lethal Weapon 1 and 2, The Last Boy Scout, Die Hard 2, Demolition Man, Legend of Zorro, Green Lantern, Salt, Casino Royale, and Skyfall. So he's been around.
You say he's a pretty decent writer, just not that great of a director.
Well,
I mean, some of those movies, though.
Green Lantern. Green Lantern and Salt, specifically.
Yeah, but there were some good ones in there.
I saw Salt in theaters. How did that happen?
How did that happen?
I don't know.
I haven't even seen Salt.
You're not.
I know.
This is Fat Chat. We all know you've seen Salt.
Just sprinkle salt in your eyes.
That's pretty much it. I haven't seen Salt the movie.
Oh, okay. All right.
Thank you for that.
Well, to be fair, none of us actually check the salt content of anything we put in our mouths.
No, I have to now.
I'm on a quick train to Diabetes Town. But anyway, so a quick history of this movie. The Tomcat Squadron that received the shoot-down order received it over a CRM-115 device, which was a nod to the CRM-114 device that was seen in Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Love the Bomb, blah, blah, blah.
None of you at home can see the faces we're giving Tony right now.
Whatever. The Air Force base that the fighter pilots came from was the Thude, which was the same Norwegian camp in the movie The Thing with Kurt Russell, who was also in this.
Is the Thune your voice from Skyrim?
Not the Thume.
Thune Skyrim? Yes, it's the Thume.
Whoos! Yes.
Well, as it launches the plane. Yes.
The afterburners go off. Duh!
And also, apparently, John Leguizamo didn't really do a great job of making friends on the set.
What?
Surprise, surprise. As a lot of his ad-libbing caused some problems with Kurt Russell, and in fact, the line about, I hope the smell doesn't give us away, started a fight between them. And he also got a little physical with Steven Seagal, who I guess was just trying to...
That is a poor choice.
Although I don't believe that was his choice. I think that was just either he said the wrong thing or Steven Seagal was like, you're the weak link, so...
What are you, Steven, so tall? Oh, I'm broken in 3 places.
Please don't break my arm.
At first, Steven Seagal refused to shoot the scene where he was supposed to die, which originally involved him dealing with air pressure and his head exploding. But he thought his fans would not appreciate that, so he just flat out refused to do it. Until they did some rewrites.
my head's pretty big already. You sure you want to do this?
He was nominated for a Razzie for his performance here, but he lost it to Marlon Brando in Island of Dr. Monroe.
That is fair.
He got a Razzie nomination for this movie?
He did. Wow.
The Razzie is being terrible, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
This is my favorite Steven Seagal performance.
Because he dies, he has two lines and dies.
Hell yeah. Really
quick. That's why. Yes. That's
why. That's apparently, Steven Seagal is really big in Germany, so his face was added to the poster of this movie and the VHS cover just to get boosted sales, I suppose.
Well, he got like second billing in the credits, right?
I believe he did, yeah. And originally, Paramount had the rights to this, but they ended up selling it to Warner Brothers in exchange for the screenplay for Forrest Gump.
That's good a pretty good deal.
Good move.
That was good on them.
Wow.
So that's a brief history of this movie. What's your personal history with this, Rob?
I've never seen it.
All right. Brian?
I've seen it, like, I think I was a teenager sitting at home. I think USA played it. USA plays everything. And it was just on. Like, yeah, I never really, like, got into it.
But Halle Berry was in it, so you watched it just in case, right?
I mean, yeah. I don't know. This movie didn't have no weight on my youth.
All right, Joe.
Oh, I like these kind of movies. This is the only one of the terrorists on an airplane kind of movie I think I would actually watch multiple times. I've seen it, probably like 10 times.
You don't want to sit down with Delta Force again?
No. And actually, I do... I feel I have to, put my money where my mouth is now, because when we watched Delta Force, I did say this was a better movie to watch. We wanted to see a movie like that.
We'll find out.
You did say that. That's right.
Yeah.
You did.
Still right. Stand behind it.
So what do we want to guess at the cost that the budget this movie had?
There's a lot of names in this movie, but I don't know if they were names at the time. I mean, Kurt Russell obviously was a name. Steven Seagal obviously was a name. John Leguizamo, not really.
No. I think Halle Berry was just kind of starting out here.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's a lot of...
Oliver Platt, really. Get him for nothing.
I'm going to go at 56 mil.
To make?
To make.
We go cheaper. I'm going to go 45.
$1.
Wow.
No. I think about 33 is what was my guess.
33?
Yeah.
It's 55.
Oh, wow. Shoot.
So Joe would steal.
Yes.
Rob, so close.
So close.
A little over.
I'll get there one day.
All right. So you want to guess at how much this movie made?
Not that.
$43 million.
I'm going to go with 56 again, because that's what I do.
I'm feeling a bomb. I'm feeling 25.
Oh, wow. No, actually, it was 69.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay. Perfect number. 69
younger. In the U.S. and 122 worldwide.
Yeah, but you don't have that. 69 is a perfect number. You can't... Mm.
So all right.
Can't argue there.
So I think I won that round, fellows.
I think it did well enough worldwide, but yeah. In the States, it didn't cover its market cost for sure.
Well, I think this came out around the same time as like Air Force One. And what's the Wesley Snipes one where he's
Passenger 57?
Always been on black.
Always been on black.
Yeah, I think those had a little more like recognizable star power. And, I think they probably sucked up more of the demand for kicking dudes on a plane.
It's been a couple of years since Pork Chop Express.
For sure.
Still got that same haircut, though.
Yeah, I think this was also the point where people were like, just stop, Steven Seagal.
To be fair, I believe this came out right around the same time as Escape from L.A.
Really?
Yeah, which is when Kurt Russell's stock was starting to fall.
Mm. Oh, and Captain Ron, right?
That might have been a little earlier.
Captain Ron.
Was Captain Ron around like 90? Wasn't that?
Yeah, I think it was closer to the early
90s. Was it early? Okay.
Yeah.
Nah, I don't
Because there was a nipple in that movie, and I remember being like, that's a nipple!
Male nipple? Female nipple?
No, female nipple.
Oh, okay.
I remember that. I'm like, that's a nipple!
It's like that part in Half-Baked where they're all fighting. He's like, that's a titty.
Yeah, yeah. So I had to be like 11, like 11 or something like that.
Let me write this down. You still do that today.
Captain
Ron. Well, yeah, but it's different, though, like.
Roughly how far into the movie did you say this nipple happens?
I remember there's a scene where they're in the shower. No, there's like a leak, and I think Captain Ron's with the dude's wife, and like her nipple pops out, and like even the TV version, it's in the TV because they don't edit it out. Like, because it's like that quick, you can still see the nipple. Like, that's a nipple. Like,
thank you, Mr. Skin.
That. Yeah, I want to say it's like 45 minutes in.
Yes, Brian Skin. Our cohort on this podcast.
So, Anyway, yeah, we kind of got into Kurt Russell and so on. Who else we got in this movie? All right,
obviously Kurt Russell being awesome as usual.
It's Kurt Russell.
It's interesting though that they made him not an action hero in this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, because I was expecting Kurt Russell just to beat everyone's ass.
Yeah, he was. They put glasses on him and made him wear them for the duration.
Yeah, Steven Seagal as Lieutenant Colonel Austin Travis. Just Steven Seagal.
Two American man.
Two first names.
Yep. You got young Halle Berry as the Jean the flight attendant. Or Jean the flight attendant.
John the flight attendant. I believe Kurt Russell was the John in this situation.
Yes. I don't know. There wasn't a lot expected of her, but I think she did it well.
Yeah.
Sure.
Just, you know.
I believe this was her first, like, big picture where she got paid a lot of money. Mm. But yeah, she was fine.
Yeah. John Leguizamo as Rat.
Yeah, he is.
So that's his name was Rat?
Yeah.
That was actually his Rat. Call sign, yeah.
I thought his name was Rad this whole time. Oh, like radical, dude.
It was Rat.
Okay, well, that makes way more sense.
You say Luigi.
Yeah, you could have said Luigi, too.
Luigi Mario, might I remind you.
This is Mario Mario and Luigi Mario.
He's here with his father, brother, step-something.
He's my dad. I don't know. It's like a Will Ferrell movie. Who can tell?
So, Oliver Platt as Dennis Cahill.
That guy.
Yeah, just, you know, Oliver Platt.
Oliver Platt doing Oliver Platt things.
At least he didn't get kicked in the dick like 20 times.
What else is he? Like, I'm sure he's in a lot of things.
Have you ever seen Ready to Rumble?
Nope.
Don't. But that's the only one other one I really remember with him.
Like the only one
put it on the list.
And the only one I remember.
Critical Failure movie.
The only one I remember with him is Lake Placid.
Yeah.
Where he's the crazy millionaire. That's on the list.
He does that kind of stuff a lot. He might have been in Congo.
Yeah, he's been in a few other things. I probably shouldn't have trouble remembering them right now.
But he's been in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, that's basically it. There's like a few other commandos, but there's really not a big cast movie.
Well, B.D. Wong, I mean.
Yeah, you do have B.D. Wong,
He's in it.
As Sergeant Louis.
I mean, Sergeant Louis.
Why is he so near and dear to you, Rob?
I just thought we should mention him because he's in it for the whole movie, basically. And yeah, he's there. It's pretty good.
You want to mention? Nope. Okay. Sure. So anyway.
I don't think I've ever seen him in anything else.
Nothing at all.
Nope, nothing I can think of.
If people could only see the shirt Rob's wearing.
I didn't realize. I had the JP colors flying.
Yeah.
Well, it was every day.
Flying high. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, usually. But that's just the tattoo on my ass.
You should get a tattoo.
I really should.
Just a T-Rex bones.
Just do it across the back, like the when dinosaurs ruled the earth.
Oh, that would be so awesome. But I'll have it at Grimlock instead of like a real T-Rex.
You should get a Dinobots as a tramp stamp.
Yeah, but I already have an Autobot symbol back there. So
well, add it to it. Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Be like Grimlock's footprint in the center.
Yeah, the wings from what's his name? Swoop's wings and stuff.
His name is just Swoop.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. That's fine.
They weren't very creative.
Do we want to start this off here?
I suppose we should. Yeah. All right, so we start off, we get SEAL Team 6 invading some compound, basically combining the entirety of the 2-something boring hours that was Delta Force into a few, so, like, 5 minutes.
Brian actually brings up a good point. The first half of this movie is, like, front-loaded with constantly telling you where they are.
Digital like, text across the screen.
The 90s was all about this digital text and all about the sound effects to tell you text is happening.
It was painful.
They want to make sure if you were blind, you knew that there was text on the screen.
And typing out slowly, like, you are in West Texas.
It's so awful. But this movie basically starts out with like a previously on executive decisions like sequence.
It's a giant flashback.
We're not even there yet, but because we get Steven Seagal, he comes busting in.
Comes busting in. Yep.
him and his team start shooting up the place. They take some people out. They lose one of their own. They get to the basement and they find it's been emptied. There's nothing there.
It's like the commando attack in Predator, except take out about 75% of the fun.
Yeah.
It's just people getting shot. And Steven Seagal shanking some people.
Yeah, we made a lot of references to Predator during all that.
But yeah, they're trying to find some DZ5 nerve gas. There's none there.
Oh yeah, that's right. We start with the failed, like,
mission. Dun, dun, dun. So Steven Seagal puts his tail between his legs. He starts going home.
That's not his tail.
You know what this movie needed? I mean, it needs a lot of things, but Chuck Norris. It would have been nice if during this part,
a half hour,
it was
less.
An actual A-Team soundtrack playing in the background. It's like the drum rolls and like. Yeah.
Well, see, if this was done like, 10 years earlier, there would be some awesome music during this.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, even if it's not the A-Team music, like, some better music than this. Yeah. Like, we could have had some good pumping action sounds.
There would be a little bit more exploding, maybe a bit of slow-mo, I don't know.
Yeah, we could use all of it.
Yeah, but it would have been a little more exciting.
Yeah, but instead we just cut to Kurt Russell flying a plane to show you that he can.
This is the first part where the movie angers me.
Why is that?
Because it's, like, what I hate about the movies on the plane is the scene at the end where they have to land the plane.
Right.
Just stupid.
Right.
Because
you always know the plane's just going to land.
Right.
Or in case of Air Force One where it crashes, you still know, like, no one important is going to die. So, like, when I saw him flying the little prop plane, I was like, fuck, he's going to have to land the plane.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Of
absolutely.
Course. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like.
Oh, yeah. That was an obvious setup.
Yeah.
It's like. Yeah. Oh, I gotta land a plane. Mm-hmm. What? This movie about a plane? You gotta learn how to land a plane? That's so weird.
Don't think about it. Just fly the plane.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Yeah. What am I forgetting? You're forgetting how to forget about it and just fly the plane. What?
It's okay once we hit 88
miles an hour. Before you get time to process that, you just like, we're at a wedding, people are being shot. You're like, yeah. Who is anybody here?
Yeah, it's
weird acid flashback that came out of nowhere.
But it wasn't even a flashback because it was happening at the same time.
Right. Yeah.
Like, but it was in sepia tone, which indicates some kind of flashback.
Like, when I was watching it, I honestly thought, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but like, I honestly thought we were watching a sequel and it was showing us parts of the first movie. Yeah. And I'm like,
for a hot second, I thought the version of the movie we got was recorded over something else.
Yeah, I kind of thought it was recorded over something too.
Like, oh,
it's really out of place.
Yeah, when did this episode of NCIS get thrown in here? What's happening? It was just really confusing.
I know, show, don't tell, but this scene really could have just been, they could just mention it in exposition.
Yeah.
Or
it could just been in the briefing room.
Or this could have been tied in with what was going on with Seagal in the beginning, and like somehow that, came about and connected.
Or, all right, if you're going to show us this, like, I would have been fine even with this scene, just not in like a CP. It honestly looked like this was a made-for-TV movie.
Yeah.
It was so terrible looking. Like, it took me out of the film completely.
Also, transitions, because this really just goes from Kurt Russell being told he has a phone call to smash cut, shit's happening. Just all kinds of crazy shit being thrown at you.
Yeah.
It was bananas and confusing.
Yeah, and you don't know what's happening until they mention that it happened afterwards, when they could have just mentioned that, then that would have been fine.
There's a bunch of this movie where they spend more time doing something useless, like something that had no point of you watching. They could have just said this happens, or just alluded to it happening. Don't have to show us that, because at least 25 minutes of this movie was like that, at least.
25?
See, I don't know.
Because the last 10 was that completely.
I would say probably, like, it's a 2 hour and 10 minute movie or something like that?
Like 220 almost.
220?
It's up there.
So probably an hour and 20 minutes probably we didn't need.
This could have been amazing.
The stuff on the plane I thought was suspenseful. This stuff I was like, I don't know what's going on. This is just weird.
Some of it, I'll grant you, was suspenseful. Mm-hmm. A lot of it was just bloated nonsense.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of time it took us to get to the plane, a lot of that time could have been cut out.
Dude, I think it was almost an hour in before we got to the plane.
Yeah, we had boardroom decision making and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, it's an executive decision, but the president is never shown in this movie.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
It's like, he's not here. Oh, okay.
It should have been a question mark at the end. Decision?
whose decision was it?
Some guy. No,
Phil. There is a titular line in there somewhere where they said it's an executive decision now.
Is there? I didn't even realize. Yeah. Yeah. I totally missed that.
When it comes up.
Okay.
I probably missed it because I was falling asleep.
You were
asleep.
I heard the part where they said, oh, the president's in another country.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, the princess is in another
country. Exactly. Yeah. You guys are not going to believe this. Hey, Luigi.
Oh, man. So, we see the guy from the flashback is now on this plane. He pops up, he takes everybody hostage. They got some whole plan where he's...
Wait, which guy from the flashback? You mean Poirot?
Poirot, yes. Our French hunter.
Or, a second time on the show, first of all.
As a bad guy.
As a bad guy.
And, his name escapes me now, but yes.
It's David Suchet.
Suchet. Mm-hmm. All right, from Harry and the Hendersons.
Harry and the Hendersons.
Oh, yeah, he has it.
Yeah. Chronicles of Narnia.
The Chronicles of Narnia?
Audio. The radio presentation of Narnia, he plays Aslan.
Okay, I didn't know that, because what's a radio?
You're older than I am.
I'm fucking with you. Calm down, man. Fuck.
Listen, I know you're messing with me, but like the audience doesn't know that.
You get so sensitive about these Chronicle of Narnia audiobooks.
I am sensitive about it. It's true.
It's weird.
It's dear to my heart. I don't wear a shirt because I don't own one.
He has a lion's paw tattoo over his heart.
I do, though.
I thought it was just above his pelvis.
No. No, that's where the tail is. It actually wraps around. Never mind.
That's where his little turtle, his little sea turtle is.
It's Crush from Finding Nemo.
There's a butterfly on the other side.
Anyway.
It's flying up the happy trail.
Anyway.
So.
Joe, what?
Rob's like something else. I was going to say before this went somewhere I didn't want to think about was that Tony skipped a bunch of stuff. None of it was important.
Nope.
No. I was going to stop him and be like, fuck it, let's go.
That's kind of the theme of the movie.
Terrorists took over the plane. I did like the guy's disguise, though, that he snuck on the plane with.
Like Albert Einstein?
Yeah, he's like, I can't just be an Arab man. Like,
oh, yeah.
Check my bag. Yeah.
He dressed as Judd Hirsch and snuck on the plane.
Yeah, it's like you hide the guns. You don't have to disguise yourself. I don't know.
Come along, Hastings. Well,
I guess he was on. Well, no, they didn't even know what he looks like. He was on like a most wanted list, but nobody knew.
Yeah, but like he tans real well. So in the airport, you tend to get
By tans real well, you mean he could put some eyeliner on.
Meaning, if you had that shade chart in front of you, he's right on the edge of, hey, wait a minute. So he put a disguise on.
He's closer to a Manila envelope instead of like notebook paper.
He's not. So white is serial killer. Brown is.
It's got to be in the middle somewhere. It's in the middle somewhere.
Like gun.
It's the early 90s, so he's if right you were brown, you would take... Well, that's fucking today now. Fuck! Right back to it. All fear and hate, right back
he's
to it.
He's yellowish-brownish enough to be a terrorist, I guess.
That's why he plays him in all his movies.
Yes,
I would buy that.
You know he's British.
Every other terrorist that was on that plane didn't disguise themselves, though.
Yeah, so, but like he's the only one who had guns in his stuff.
Right.
Everyone else got it from hidden in the food carts in the plane.
Yeah, so this was an inside job, obviously, because there were guns like everywhere.
He was the only one who had stuff in his bags. Everyone else had to get it from, like, he gave it to other people and from in the food carts and stuff like that.
Do you think maybe this is why no one knows what he looks like? Because he keeps going around in disguise?
Well, obviously.
Yeah, I guess so. So... A few important things when the terrorists take the plane. Halle Berry throws out the manifest, which says that there's an air marshal on the plane. Why the fuck it would say that, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's probably for the safety of the flight attendants.
Well, like, I would argue that would be in code, though. That,
yeah, yeah. It would be like symbols or some. Or, yeah, or
we have to remember this is pre 9/11.
True.
I guess, but still, true. They should, you know, be like the guy in seat 21K is a bedwetter or something.
Yeah,
like
that. Diabetes risk.
Yeah, but to be fair, if you looked at him, you would think, yeah, that guy is a diabetes risk.
This guy's like discount Wilford Brimley.
That's what I'm saying. This guy is the dude from
Office Space.
Office Space.
Yeah, it was Milton, wasn't it?
Jump to conclusions. Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, he stashes his pistol. Poor guy.
He needs a gun because there's no way he's doing anything without one. So,
which I gotta say though, like this was, I liked that he at least was really smart with this. Like, you know, he threw the badge in the vomit bag so they wouldn't find that. Yeah. He stowed his gun in his sock so that wouldn't be spotted immediately. Like, it was smart.
I like to call him.
Showed he's a competent.
If he put it in the barf bag, then just immediately puked.
Make sure nobody goes after that.
I like to call him I like to call him the poor man's Brian Doyle Murray. Yeah,
that's fair. Oh,
Jesus. This poor guy.
Well, I would say if like Brian Doyle Murray and Wilford Brimley's Venn diagrams converge, he would be kind of in the middle there.
That's like two horsemen of the apocalypse right there.
Also, I like how the movie's courteous enough to have the stewardess that's about to get married and have the happy thing happen just immediately die.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like, just took her downstairs and killed her.
And I thought just knocked her out. Then, like, 5 minutes later, her fucking neck's poking out the side of her fucking...
He threw her real hard against that. Yeah.
So here's a sad admission.
What's that?
Aside from the fact that I've apparently eaten 4 fudge rounds / peanut butter.
Yeah, you're going for the high score.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Speaking of diabetes risk, yes.
For, like, the most of the beginning of the movie, I totally thought that was Melanie Griffith.
To back you up a little bit, I kind of did for a second too, and I thought Jane Fonda was the other
one. Yeah, the other one, the other blonde. Yeah. Okay. All right. What? See, I'm not alone.
Okay. Yeah. And apparently, the other blonde was actually a porn actress.
A what?
She's a porn actress.
No, because I'm sure.
What's her name?
I do not know.
Oh. Ryan could identify her by tattoos if she had. Yeah.
Well, it's the 90s, so probably not.
But I
she
swear,
goes
by Misty Mountain. No,
the like, 90s. All right, probably so if it was late 90s, I probably could.
I'm gonna say I could have sworn I recognized her, yeah. but
we're gonna shut up.
No, please don't.
But
don't red tube right now. So I could have sworn I recognized her from like TGIF shows. Like I could have sworn I saw her in those kind of shows.
Can't she do both?
Wait, the one that died maybe.
No, the other one.
Well, I don't know. She did this. Maybe she did other things before or after. All those Disney kids are doing weird stuff now, so who knows?
That's a whole conspiracy, though.
But also, wait, I quickly want to point out the poor stewardess that died is also a returning guest to the show, because she was the mother from Monster Squad.
Yeah, does she have a name? Do we have a name in this line?
She does.
We didn't bother to put it on the cast.
That's fine. Nope.
Mary Ellen Trainer.
Sure. Wait, was
Marla Maples, word?
Wait, what?
Huh? Oh,
Brian's discovery.
One of the flight attendants, mm-hmm. Marla Maples, Trump's wife.
Oh yeah, I did see that in the credits. Yeah,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah Trump's wife.
Which one?
One of the blonde. There was three blonde.
Yeah,
I only saw those two.
They all look pretty much the same. Yeah,
it was three blonde. The older one died.
Yeah. What the one in the middle one was Tony Sis was a porn star. The other one was Marla Maples.
That's a funny thing. So yeah, Halle Berry gives this blonde chick. This weird, like, it looks like a salt and pepper shaker. This little, like wedding topper married couple.
Yeah.
She's like, it's for the ring. I'm like, that makes no sense.
Yeah, I was like, at what part does the ring go there?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Also, you're wearing the ring on your finger. So you're getting married. You're going to die. I understand how this works. So, yeah. So the terrorists just come in and push her.
They or shove like, her real hard.
Yeah, they like body check her, and they choke slam her, kind of.
Yeah.
And apparently just breaks her neck on the side of this, like,
yo, like for real. Trade her neck thing. Pops, pokes out the skin.
Oh, yeah, she's super dead.
Yeah, she's all kinds of dead.
And then they're like pulling automatic weapons out of the food carts and stuff.
Yeah, they're just hidden in all kinds of little compartments and other little goodies and doodads. They got guns all over the place. So, Now they're in control of the plane.
You get Kurt Russell.
They're the captain now.
He's trying to like mac on a chick at a ball. He's rocking a tuxedo.
Yep.
And then this Navy guy's like, yeah, you gotta come with
me. Yeah.
Which I would think would be even like better. Less of an interruption. You just be like, hey, here's my number. I gotta go. The government needs me.
Yeah. How awesome is that?
That's a smooth move. I will give you that.
You're Kurt Russell. I mean, he's like, do you like hockey? She's like,
she loves it. She loves it.
He's like, yeah, because I mean, he's been rocking hockey hair since like the early 80s.
Since long before it went out of fashion.
Since Spartacus, I think. Yeah. Since his dad was in Spartacus. So, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the wrong person. I'm talking about
Douglas. Yep.
All right, I'm going to bed.
So, yeah, another thing that made me mad is there's this scene where we see, like, the Secretary of Defense. He's talking to a bunch of generals, one of which is Dr. Kelso.
Yeah.
And he's just like, we should give in to all their demands right now. And I'm like, what the hell, Dr. Kelso?
it took me the longest time to recognize that guy.
No, really. His hair is brown.
It's been forever since I've seen Scrubs. I was like, is that the dude from Fraggle Rock?
He looks just as old.
He does look just
as old. Brown hair.
His hair is browner.
That's like John Hurt in King Ralph last week. He just has brown hair. Like,
I mean, this came out in, what, 96? Mm-hmm. When did Scrubs first start? Like,
it wasn't that long.
No, it wasn't that long.
I think it was like 98, I think. Yeah, that's really after.
I mean,
so yeah, they find out about this guy, Altar.
We're all old.
Arabic for revenge. She's going to use the DZ-5 on the U.S. I don't get how this works.
So that's one thing that I wish they hadn't used the scroll for in the beginning, because I think they mentioned DZF in the scroll.
They do. Yes.
But like, I would have preferred that someone had just said,
like nerve gas?
Yeah, nerve gas. Yeah. Like, just said, like, gotta find the nerve gas. Like,
say what it is. Something
to say. Like,
so there's a few
the nerve gas is not here.
Or just be honest and say MacGuffin.
Right.
There's a few problems I have with this. Like, one, like, I don't understand the whole thing of, like, you're going to crash a plane full of nerve gas or blow it up, where I'm like, it would blow up the nerve gas, too, I would think. I don't know. I don't know enough about chemistry. Maybe that works.
Yeah, that...
Whatever.
I would imagine it's to get the effect of, like, crop dusting, where it would spread this agent out.
I would...
And possibly...
Maybe, but, like... when you blow up an airplane, the amount of fuel and everything.
Yeah, wouldn't the decompression and the fire would be like consuming all of the oxygen and presumably all of the toxin. It would just burn up, right?
I don't know. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe DZ-5, like that, it can still work with that.
Yeah.
I mean, unless they were planning on like actually landing the plane and then the bomb is not like incendiary, it just like sends out the gas.
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe, but still, I think the Joker got it right.
Yeah, they should have just had big ass parade balloons.
Just big parade balloons.
But
who do you trust?
No. When the plane lands, right, they inflate the little slide full of the gas, and then that shoots off like.
But the slide is a big clown.
Yeah.
Hubba hubba hubba. Money.
But the more importantly though is like after 9/11, kind of the plot of this movie is sort of.
Yeah.
The stakes aren't really the same because, like, nowadays they would just blow this plane out of the sky.
Oh, yeah, they would.
Like, we thought there was a bomb on it. And everyone would be like, okay.
All
right. It wouldn't be a big deal.
I was kind of trying to avoid that because, just the whole, relation to 9/11 with what's going on here is a little too eerily close and unpleasant.
How many?
But I mean, like, that's the point of the podcast. See how it holds up, you know?
Yeah, I know.
So how many people did they say were on this plane?
400.
400 something.
Does the 747 really hold that many people?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
It's huge.
All right.
It's, what is it, 4 across, 7 across? No, 4. It's 474?
I thought it was.
And then there's the upper deck too.
4-3, so it's 10 across on the rows.
Okay, because I thought it was like 200 something. Yeah.
No, because up until the Airbus, this plane carried the most people.
Wow.
Of any non-military plane.
All right.
And I mean, one of these can carry a space shuttle on its back. Like, it's a really big plane.
Wow.
It's huge.
Okay.
And it has.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. but they still nowadays they'd just be like, all right, buy 400 people.
Well, yes. They would shoot.
Gotta save the Pentagon. See you later.
I mean, I understand the drama of like we'll never be able to prove it, something like that. But yeah, nowadays they would just be like, all right, you had a good enough suspicion.
Yep.
I mean, it's sad, but we understand.
Yeah. But there's a senator on board.
Because this is the world.
Oh, then all the people in the other party would be like, good.
He was a jerk anyway with my small hands.
So now we find out about this plane, the Remora, which can, it's a stealth fighter with a crew compartment.
What model stealth fighter, Joe?
Isn't it the F-117A?
Yeah, it's the one. Yeah, it looked from the outside like the F-117A.
I wanted verification. I believe you, but he's our resident expert.
No, true. Yeah. But like the F-117A is not big enough to have those people in it. I mean, like
when he wants to know at what moment exactly did the nipple come out and Captain Ron comes to you, he wants to know about smoke bombers.
Wow.
All right.
Tell me I'm wrong.
Does the F-117A have a sky penis? Like
it
this?
Does not.
Okay.
No.
All right.
I liked the concept of this. I just didn't like how they kind of just took a stealth fighter and were like, there you go.
Yeah, it's got a sky penis. Yeah.
I would have preferred them to like change it up a little bit.
Hmm.
But this was also shortly after the Gulf War, where the stealth bomber was like cool shit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I believe this, we discussed this already. I believe this plane was actually retired after this. And that's probably why they used it, is they were able to on one of its last flights.
Yeah. I had a snap type model kit of this. Mm-hmm. It was fluorescent orange and translucent. But yeah, it was totally stealth.
Did it have sky penis?
I added one.
Okay. Your penis does not count as a sky penis, Rob.
So, no.
Okay.
It just flew into my penis a lot.
Yeah, the basic idea, they're going to send a team of commandos on board this thing. Yeah, dock with the 747, get them aboard.
And that was my plan.
Take the plane.
It was easier to clean than my Transformers. Anyway, so
refueling was gross. Yeah.
Can I just say, watching this scene just made me want to watch Predator, because Dutch and his crew are so much more awesome.
I was thinking about that on the flight up. This, again, is like Predator with like 75% less fun.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
I needed a sexual Tyrannosaurus.
These commandos, I don't think they were bad, other than Steven Seagal, but like they were pretty like unremarkable.
Steven Seagal,
I will trade you a Shane Black for John Leguizamo any day.
That that's fair, but nobody else on the Predator roster.
Wait, I would really?
No, I'm saying like I would rather have Shane Black than John Leguizamo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I was gonna say
that. Shane Black
was the only one on the Predator.
Oh,
team
he was the suckiest of that team. Yeah, but still,
he was the worst. But still, like his humor, at least, like it was. I was almost said subtle. And that's not the word I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
It easily ignored.
Yeah,
you could just be entertaining at least.
Yeah, you could just be like, "Hey, Shane Black, I don't really like your disgusting jokes. Keep them to yourself." And but he'd be like, "And I, yeah, I mean, he'd be like, okay, all right, I'll just read a dirty magazine."
He was kind of. It was kind of like dad jokes, where it's not something you want, but like you can deal with.
So, like, back to this movie.
John Leguizamo here is he's spitting shit out left and right, and most of it is just annoying and offensive. And I don't want any.
John Leguizamo didn't. Yeah.
Why?
It's because I'm a method actor.
He does all the editing, that's really why.
Not that I do any. But yeah, John Leguizamo.
As evidenced by our King Ralph episode. Sorry,
I can't listen to everything all the time. You guys just never shut up. It's my job. I haven't seen a paycheck yet.
Not one. So, not one. 4 a.m. podcast at paypal.com.
Not sit up yet.
Oh, sorry.
So Steven Seagal is easily the worst member of this team.
Yeah, he's in charge of it too.
He makes terrible decisions.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And let's get into those right now.
Yeah, that one where Cahill's like, I don't need to go on the plane. He's like, too bad. That's how it's happening.
Yeah, let's go. Also, we're going to send somebody up after you that's holding the clip that's vitally important, apparently, to hold this button down.
And all you need to do is literally just stick it on the one button that you probably know where it is because you're an engineer.
Right.
And presumably this is why we're sending you ahead.
Yeah.
Right. And he's like, I don't need to go. I could tell somebody what to do. He's like, you're going.
Yeah.
It's like literally all you had to do is turn a knob.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, you just had to turn a handle.
Presumably, he had to take some pressure readings. But okay. I think he did all that before he even went up in the sleeve.
Yeah.
No, he had to verify. He had a vacuum match, which was he looked at one dial. It was the same number as the other dial. Okay,
yeah,
you match.
Yeah, like, you can't. You can't tell these elite, like, SEAL Team 6 how to do this crap.
We see later on they have, like, cameras and video equipment. He could just be watching from that stealth bomber and just be like, yeah, that looks good. You're good to go.
He could just yell it down to him. Yeah. Like, it's 10 feet of sky penis. Like, you could just, like...
They're both pointing at 11 o'clock. Is that good?
Once you're in the urethra, you could just, like shout down and be like, hey.
Fortunately, time... was on, like, the time era was on their side for this, because if it was today, they'd have Wi-Fi cameras set up.
Yeah.
They'd be, you know, like the inner ear, you know, microphone shits, you know.
Well, yeah. The terrorists would have never gotten on the plane.
A video camera wouldn't have worked, because you saw they had to use the home recorders. I don't get the whole... Fuck. All right, this whole scene, they have to get in this fucking tube to get onto the fucking plane.
Yep.
And Seagal makes a whole point that one of his teammates has to go up there with this other guy to turn off the alarm that's there.
Right.
All the alarm is that button inside the fridge and the door's open, that says the door's open.
Yep.
Where, like, if you put your finger on a button, the light goes off. Like, on some duct tape. That was it. Yeah. That was all it was. But they made this big deal about it.
And they have duct tape.
They have duct tape with them.
Yeah, and honestly, like, if they just showed the first guy how to put the clip on, they all just scrambled up in there.
Yeah.
Like, this whole thing wouldn't have happened.
Right.
Or send one of your SEAL members in there first, since, you know, that's their freaking job. Yeah.
You didn't need, like, dumb-ass Cahill going up the ladder first.
And I understand they wanted to do it for, like, defense, like, suspense. That's the word I was looking for. But it starts to be less suspenseful and more us questioning the abilities of this team. You know, like, these are our heroes? Like, they can't even do the most simple of tasks.
But even if you're talking suspenseful, it could have been just as suspenseful of him running up there and having to quickly, you know, jump up and hit the little button or whatever, hold it down, either hold it down till they got the clip in there, or he put the clip on, whatever. The suspense really comes later on when I believe it's B.D. Wong accidentally hits into it because of some turbulence, knocking the clip off and then thus setting off the alarm again.
So now that's my other problem with the whole scene. And they kind of get into it a little bit, but they had this one plane under another plane trying to get whatever. The minute they connect,
it's Macon,
there should be, like, issues with turbulence and shit.
Yeah.
So it makes total sense for it to happen in the movie, but they're all shocked that that it's not stable anymore. Like, what the fuck you think was going to happen? Like, what do you think was going to happen? The minute you connected, if that plane turns left or right and you don't know it, you're fucked. Like, what?
Yeah.
They're all, oh no, it's moving. Oh, they're
oh no.
Fuck you. Yeah, chilly ass idea. Like, fuck.
So.
Yeah.
This is why you're, you know, this elite team. We got you because this is a dangerous mission. This is difficult to do. Yeah.
So to wrap the scene up, basically, these idiots, this whole team of idiots, is basically climbing in to the aeronautics room of the 747. Mm-hmm. Steven Seagal is still down in the stealth fighter.
He's in the urethra.
Yeah. He's in the urethra. And, like, they're starting to get turbulence in the 747 and the light's going off because these idiots knocked off the clip to hold it down when all they needed was a piece of tape.
And also the 747 is starting to dive because there's a stealth fighter hanging off.
Right. because there's, like, several tons more weight on the front of the plane than they were used to. And
one of the guys gets hurt.
Yeah. Hurt is an understatement.
Yeah.
We'll get there. So, yeah. Like, they get inside, and now they're using their bodies to destroy all of the equipment inside the 747. And, you know, the 747 starts accelerating and actually going up into the sky further. So it becomes this whole big thing, and the bomber, the stealth fighter is starting to, like, break away. And so ultimately, Steven Seagal gets caught in the urethra.
Well, he has to close the hatch. Otherwise, the 747 is going to decrest.
Right. Yeah. So he closes the hatch.
He sacrifices himself.
Yeah, and gets shot out of the sky penis.
We're not going to make it.
And you are.
Yeah.
And I love the detail of they have, not only does this penis break off, but you see little Steven Seagal go flying out the back and bounce off one of the back wings.
We'll call him Seaman Seagal now because he shoots out of the sky penis.
And so he shall be forever known
as Steven Seagal.
So, that right there bought me so much cred for this movie. I was like, yes!
Yeah. I think we skipped over this, but like I've seen this movie once or twice. I've seen this scene numerous times. Yeah. thank you, YouTube.
Yeah. So that guy Cappy, their demolitions expert, he gets fucked up.
He gets paralyzed.
Yeah, pretty much paralyzed. Yeah.
He gets Terminator 2'd.
And the
it's basically what happens. So he gets to sweat and shake and lie still, just like he does in Terminator 2.
That's what this guy does.
That's it.
So you can tell somebody how to fix things, machines. And so
the plane, the Remora, breaks up and the pilot ejects, and they're like, so now everyone's like, oh, well, that failed.
Yeah.
Shit.
Who would have thought?
Yeah.
All right, but our crew is on board. Little do they know. We also get the earlier on, because there was this whole thing about getting that clip on the little button to stop the sensor. But the sensor does go off, and one guy catches it, and he's like, "I'm gonna go check on that," and then nothing really comes of that.
No, so
he never actually does anything.
So much of this film is inconsequential.
I don't know. I liked these scenes. It was going for suspense.
Yeah.
I liked it. But yeah, the guy, all he does is he makes the co-pilot go down and check the room. And the co-pilot's like, he finds like a broken circuit that Kurt Russell hands him. He's like, oh, it was this.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
But I mean, even before that, the one of the terrorist guys is just like, I'm going to check on that. And like, he leaves and then just, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, just nothing. You don't see him for another several minutes until after this scene is done. But yeah, so the pilot goes down there eventually because he's wondering what's going on. Like, why is my plane dragging? Why is the sensor going off?
Yeah, it finds a blown circuit.
Yeah.
But we also, in this point, find out that I guess Steven Seagal, being the amazing leader that he was, had most of the equipment that they needed on his person. So they don't have any communication. They don't have a radio. They don't have half of their tools.
They don't have the sleep agent they were going to use to just knock out.
Have a knockout gas. So, yeah, they're basically...
That was brewing inside Steven Seagal's tummy.
he was just going to sneak onto the plane and crop dust the whole thing. Yeah. How do you like this chili chimichangas? Take some of this. I'm going to knock you all out. You're going to wake up inside my sex dungeon.
I had a free meal at On the Border. I'd like to share some of it with you.
So what transpires now is about an hour of just coming up with plans.
Yep.
And then situations changing, so those plans are no longer valid.
Correct.
And then
coming up with a new plan.
And Oliver Platt is his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, Cahill.
So the guy that looks kind of like the painter from Murphy Brown, but isn't.
Yes. Looks kind of like Foggy from Daredevil.
Foggy from Daredevil.
He does look like he should be playing Foggy's dad.
Yeah.
And then the guy from Terminator 2. Netflix. They're like going over. They find the bomb with the DZ-5.
Got like a barometric pressure switch.
Yeah, so I just want to point this shit out. Okay, so they have a scanner. It's a little handheld thing. Yeah. They just hold near bags. When it comes near a bag with a bomb in it, it just lights up.
Yep.
Like, literally, if that was done in the airport, it goes through it goes on the conveyor belt, just have the little thing. Like,
I believe that scanner, though, was specifically set up to find
for the DZ-5.
Yeah. But, here's what I don't get. Because if that's the case, it needed to pick up particles of that in the air, right? Yeah. The dude said before in the meeting they had, one drop of that stuff was enough to kill everyone in the room. So if there's any particles for this machine to pick up, whoever's next to the machine when it picks it up should be dead.
Right. Steven Seagal exploded out of a sky penis. That's all.
Your argument is invalid.
All right, you know what? You're correct.
Your argument is valid. It's just for the context of this film, you're going to ruin everything.
Sorry, that's what I do. I ruin things.
Yeah.
That's what we all do. That's kind of the whole point of this podcast. Life.
Ruin everything.
Aww.
One quick aside here. Going back to Cahill.
Yes, Joseph.
Having seen what you saw of Oliver Platt, would you believe that he is a world champion wrestler?
Wait, who said he was?
Why, no, Joe.
I would not. Ready to Rumble, he is cast as the WCW world champion.
I would believe he was a world champion hot dog eater.
Wrestling.
For wrestling, yeah.
Oh, okay. Look, listen.
Yeah.
If you look at fucking old-ass Dusty Rhodes before, you know, recipes, like, he looked like the sloppiest motherfucker you would see.
And that was part of his charm.
Yeah, like, motherfucker had championships.
It's part of my charm.
So, like, you know, looks and wrestling can be deceiving. It's how well you it's not how well you hit, it's how well you can get hit.
I would certainly argue. I would certainly argue somewhere between the late 80s, early 90s, there were a lot of wrestlers that kind of looked like Oliver Platt.
I mean,
Mick Foley. Christian Booger.
Oh, man.
Mantor.
I mean, Andre the Giant, aside from being super tall, was just a fat dude.
He's a big motherfucker, though.
I mean,
I think my favorite, though, was Earthquake.
I was just going to say,
Earthquake was just a fat dude.
Yeah. Or Yokozuna, all those.
What was that guy with the pink stormtrooper helmet that fell over?
Oh, the Shockmaster. that was originally Tugboat, then he became Typhoon, then he became the Shockmaster.
But I will say, Oliver Platt does, like, he's not even, that's the thing, he's not even big, he's just like a normal-sized doughy guy.
Yeah.
Yep. All right.
Competitive eater, yeah.
My point redacted. He totally fits in.
Especially since that's a movie with, what, David Arquette?
Yeah, David Arquette.
So, yeah, just...
Have I seen that movie?
I haven't.
You would remember if you saw it. It's really
Is it
really
on the
bad.
List?
I don't know. It should be a critical failure. It's really bad.
I don't think it's on
we'll
the
save
list.
That for when we need more critical failures.
It's David Arquette and some other guy driving a truck full of shit to go get their wrestling hero back.
Like an over-the-top sort of situation.
It's like over-the-top, yeah. It's about as good as over-the-top.
It's just a truck full of brute.
Yeah. Okay. So, I don't know, can we fast forward?
Yes, please. Because nothing happens.
Sound very trivial. Yeah. I enjoyed watching this, but it is a lot of just setting up for things and then things changing.
This is another one of those ones where I would probably enjoy it more if we had faster paced editing and stuff. And, you know, because there's a lot of, like, them crawling around the ship, them setting up cameras. And, like, I get it, but we don't need to see step by step of it happening.
So they do set up cameras all over the plane. And in doing so, they run into Halle Berry. So let's just skip right forward to that. Halle Berry finds, she's getting coffee or something for the crew or whatever, or the passengers or whatever, and finds
a wild Kurt Russell.
No, well, first finds the what's his name's manifesto.
Yeah, his little diagram.
Yeah, it's like Legend of Zelda treasure map.
Yeah.
It's like Washington, D.C.
It blow up here effect. Yeah,
he pulled that page from like a sacred tome. It's old parchment.
But it's also kind of written like a child's map to a treasure.
He stole it from Hogwarts.
Yeah. Mischief managed.
And so, like, she's doing that, and then Kurt Russell is going down the elevator. Like, there's a like staff elevator.
I think he's being winched down.
Yeah, he's being winched down, and like they catch each other's eye. So now Halle Berry knows he's there, and all this other stuff. So now, like, they have Halle Berry's kind of an ally in the ship.
Well, I like her encounters with Hassan. She has a few of them where, like, she's trying to do something sneaky, and he's like, "What are you doing?" And, you know, at one point, he's, like, slapping her around.
Yeah.
And,
what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
Doing plain stuff. Like, I can't prove that wrong, so okay.
But, I mean, ultimately, this results in Kurt Russell and the crew, the group, need to use Halle Berry to find the guy on the plane who's the who's the sleeper, like the sleeper agent.
They managed to get to the bomb, and they as they defuse it, they think something happens and kind of activates the check. It makes them realize someone on the plane has a switch, a safety switch to set it off remotely.
I just want to make a side note of one of Halle Berry's interactions with this guy is when she gets rid of the manifest and she's like, I destroyed it. So he immediately, like, you know, he's smarter than that. So he quickly looks in the trash and can't find it and then just kind of gives up. Like, you're on a plane. What do you think she did? Did she eat it? Like, it's got to be there somewhere.
This guy's, he's a very nice guy terrorist, because I would have just taken my pistol and started slapping her with it and be like, where is it? Where is it?
I don't think he cared. I think he was like, this plane's going to blow up either way.
Well, that's true. He's like, it's like, totally unnecessary.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. He just assumed.
The fact that he looks in the trash, is like, it's not there. It must be gone. Like, it just vaporized. Like, what?
But women are a mysterious creature.
Yeah.
Are you using it like a tampon right now?
Oh my god, what?
Wow.
No.
Okay. Wow.
Besides, Kurt Russell would have seen that. Anyway, so.
Step Brothers.
Not like some F-14 fighters show up.
Yeah, they're threatening to blow up the plane if they don't land.
Dude, they got pirate skulls on their tail fins, man.
F-14s had that.
Yeah.
Do they all have
that? I don't think all of them did, but they all had something awesome on the black.
Okay.
I mean, they're badass planes.
Tigers and stuff. And
they would have their own emblem or whatever. Yeah.
I mean, I was more familiar with the F-14s, Tomcats.
That's what that plane was.
Yeah.
Shut up.
But I particularly like
their little... curse me in front of everyone, Joe.
I like their little maneuver of just like, I'm going to show you my piece. Like, you get what I'm saying? Just kind of flashes those missiles. Like, yo.
See this?
Oh, yeah.
It was literally just like, you get this? You get where I'm coming from?
Yeah. Like, these...
Well, that's like, if you can't say words, if your communication doesn't work, you do something to say, like, the dumb.
Oh, no, I know that's legit. I just thought that was, I honestly thought that was awesome. No. It's just like.
That's how Free Willy communicates with that boy.
Yeah, that's literally.
Like, slap his fin on the wall, like.
Well, it was literally like when you kind of lift your shirt or whatever to show your piece sitting in, the top of your jeans. Like, what?
Oh, is that what it's for?
See,
I just thought it was like, I have the most belly hair. I win.
That is also a valid contest.
Here's my
you
weird
win every time.
Here's my weird lion tail wrapped around my junk.
Oh my god!
See, the trail. Guess where it's leading to?
Nothing happy.
So now, if this were Maverick in one of those F-14s, he would have came up
upside down,
the plane upside down, taking a picture of the terrorists, maybe flipped them off, and they would have been like, "Shit, cancel the entire plane." This guy means business.
I don't know what's happening, but I don't like it.
Watch out for that goose.
So this one, they call like the senator that's on board up. Senator looking for like a good PR opportunity.
Yeah, he gets talked into trying to make a deal. He says he can get the president on the phone. Mm-hmm. So they're like, yeah, do that.
And again, Hans Bubula.
Yeah.
It is exactly that scene.
Yep.
Really just like, I want you to do this. I want you to do all their demands. And wait, why you got that gun? What are you doing with that gun?
This was trying to be Die Hard on a plane.
It really was. Yeah. Like, the only thing missing was the Diet Coke or whatever it was.
No, there was a Coke in it. There was a Coke. A can of Coke rolled. There was.
But this movie had a lot of scenes that just reminded me of better scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what this was. A little bit of Predator, a little bit of Die Hard. Just... Delta Force, which
this is better than Delta Force.
No, it is. I'm saying that I didn't want to mention that one as much because this is better than Delta Force, but not necessarily
it's
better.
It's
than
not a high bar to set though.
So the F-14s, they pull back like they're gonna blow this plane up, but then this is when they figure out how to use the plane's tail lights to the commandos signal. The F-14s, they're like, give us a few more minutes. We got this.
They're flashing Morse code, there's a whole thing with that where I was just like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. But because supposedly, like, they're using Morse code. They're worried other people don't still use Morse code, so they wouldn't know Morse code. But if no one knows Morse code, how do they know Morse?
Well, Navy knows.
Yeah,
because, in the event of, like, your communications fail, like, planes still do that.
I get that, but it's like, well, obviously someone still knows Morse code because you do. You're using it.
Yeah.
But they're, like, spec ops, so they should... they should technically, guys, know like any kind of
so emergency. They get the code. They're asking for just a few more minutes while the paralyzed guy and Oliver Platt are trying to defuse the bomb. John Leguizamo is trying to go in guns a-blazing. He's got BD Wong waiting in the rafters.
Dude, he's so kill hungry, man.
One thing I would have liked to see differently with the scene with the taillights. Literally, it's just as they're about to pull the trigger to fire their missiles at the plane. That's when the lights start flashing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they stop, which I don't think that would have happened at all, being that close to pull the trigger. Like for them to have the lights going earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so they're going the whole time, and just as they're about to pull the trigger then, the guy's like, wait a minute, there's a rhythm to that.
That would have made much more sense.
It's a small thing, but I think it would have made more sense. It would have still been suspenseful, but would have made just more sense, because them, like, the car in front of me stops, like, I'm not gonna shoot that, like, whatever, fuck you, like, I'm still gonna pull the trigger, like, sorry.
Well, no, because they were locked on. They were ready to go. The fire command was already given.
I
would imagine they probably would have fired off both missiles before they realized that's actually a
code. Oh, yeah. They're not going to wait.
But anyway.
So now we actually get some action.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now's when shit goes down.
And this goes down like how it would go down with Elite Commandos, but like considering you've been waiting for an hour for this. It's over pretty quick.
Yeah. Like, real quick.
Yeah.
It's more than an hour.
Us watching the movie. Like, we're way over an hour in this
point. Oh, yeah. We're like an hour and 40-something minutes in there. We're
real far in this point. Yeah. But literally it happened so fast, you could have been like, we should have just done that to begin with. <It's>
for real. For real.
Took a pee break, like, you could have missed the entire...
Yeah, so Leguizamo blows the fuse for the lights on the plane. Yeah.
Well, first, Kurt Russell just comes up on that elevator, and he's got his gun and Halle Berry's back.
Doesn't tell anybody that he's doing that.
Yeah, he's just kind of...
Like, and that's... All right. Okay, this dude is like, the whole time, no, we can't go in. You gotta find the guy. Can't go in, you gotta find the guy. He just fucking goes in.
Yeah, like, he's like, well, I'm gonna find the guy.
It's because he thinks he found the guy. But he did not.
Here's the problem with Kurt Russell's character, right? So... It's just some dude with like a thing of diamonds or whatever.
Yes.
So he has the wrong guy. So he looks around. He's like, where is he? Where is he? Brown man. Go. And that's it.
Yeah.
Now hold on. They do force that. Like the scene before, they show in like the war room where the guy's talking about what's happening. And they show a picture of the dude that made the button that made the bomb.
Yeah.
They show his picture.
Yes.
And so you see that dude is the guy on the plane. Yeah. Like they make,
it is fair. Kurt Russell would have known.
Yeah, yeah. They make it a point. He's like an expert profiler.
But it is funny. Just at the time, though, he's just like,
dude, that's a brown guy.
We all thought that.
He's looking at me.
We're all just like, he's scanning the room, scanning the room. Brown guy. Yeah. Got it.
Yeah. He's got the big...
bomb maker, like, he was immediately like, shit. He was conspicuous as hell. But man, Kurt Russell just sucks in this scene. Like,
well, yeah,
he misses with the gun. The guy just kind of beats him up.
Yeah,
like someone else shoots the guy.
He gets in a scuffle with a dude with the diamonds. He shoots at this guy, doesn't really hit him. Jumps on him. They start wrestling around and like knocking the gun out of his hands, knocking the controls thing out of his hands. He they're fighting over that. Then he just gets his foot stuck in a little tray or whatever that.
It doesn't matter.
If he just went backwards a foot and then forward, he would be fine.
Yeah, it was literally like one of those just like turn your foot or something. Yeah. What the fuck is wrong with you?
And it's kind of at this point that all hell sort of breaks loose on the plane. Because
this is when the lights get tripped, even though it doesn't get darker.
Yeah.
John Leguizamo busts through the ceiling. He's firing at people. His BD Wong and the other dude just come in. They start firing like crazy.
We got broken neck guy and
Oliver Platt.
That dude trying to defuse the bomb,
which has a ridiculous laser grade on it.
Yeah, it's wacky. It has a decoy thing set up on the outside, and it's like pressure sensitive, laser sensitive things on the inside.
And it's just foiled by Oliver Platt falls forward while holding a straw.
A straw, yep.
Literally, yep. That's it.
That just blocks the access. For the detonators to touch. Then we get that decompression trope where like one guy just runs out just spraying his AK-47 everywhere and it rips one of the walls off the plane.
Yep. And a bunch of people go flying on out. A lot of the bad guys, or the corpses at least, mm-hmm. they're all gone. The innocent bisons that were on their way home.
All those diamonds. London.
Those diamonds are gone. Those
diamonds are gone.
Yep.
I don't know.
Oh, the air marshal, like, shot one dude, then got the shit shot out of him.
Yes.
Yeah, poor guy.
But at least, like...
He did something.
Yeah, yeah.
They made him competent, more or less.
I would have preferred if he was the absolute hero of the movie.
Yeah.
And got both the head bad guy and the guy, like, and the guy with the detonator. I think it would have been awesome if, like, big old fat dude saved the day. But you can't have that happen.
How funny would it have been, though, if right before they attacked, he just stood up and just shot him?
It would have been so great.
Because that also would have been all, because there was that whole talk about, like, you had the elite squad there, and but they're like, we're outnumbered or whatever. We need another gunman. So they get Kurt Russell, who clearly doesn't know what he's doing. So what if he went up there and kind of bumbled his way through it, and then the air marshal was just like, I got this. Bam, bam, bam. Like, took them all out.
But they picked a chubby guy, so he can't.
Yeah.
Can't have a chubby guy do things in movies.
They should, though.
They should, yeah. I mean, unless it's a Jack Black comedy, it's just not going to happen.
James, Paul Blart.
Does that count? I think that's a step back. Yeah. I mean,
the closest you're getting to a fat guy hero, it would be Jack Black in Pick a Destiny, and that's because he wrote it.
Or Nacho Libre.
Yeah. Same.
Also
same.
Jack Black.
Yeah.
The guy who's sort of like Jack Black in Balls of Fury.
Okay. No, because even Nick Frost is just a sidekick in all those movies.
Dude, Eastbound and Down.
There you go.
I suppose.
So anyway.
This is when Hassan just shoots Rat in the ass.
Yeah. Yes. Right in the butt.
He goes on a killing spree.
Yeah.
Sort of. So...
Well, he's going crazy now. He's like, we're so close. I got the shit in the bag.
Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, what?
Well, Kurt Russell shows up. He's like, it's over. We found the bomb. We killed your dudes. You know, you don't got anything anymore. He's like, oh, I got something. He just shoots all the pilots.
I got an Uzi and just spins around firing.
Got another 40 minutes of this movie ending.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, so now the pilots are dead. Big surprise. Kurt Russell's there, and he's got to fly the plane. Who would have thought?
Oh, my God. This part of the movie is the worst.
It takes so long.
It's the worst part.
This is already a trope as it is, and it's annoying. But just to make matters worse, he doesn't get the runway on the first try.
He doesn't get the runway, period. Yes. He goes to another airport.
Yes.
So they give him clearance to emergency land at Dulles. So they have all the emergency gear there, all the fire department and everything is there, and he totally whiffs.
Yep.
And he has to go to the airport he was at in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
Where he was practicing.
Prop planes.
Yes.
Right.
And not for a 747.
So he does end up landing there successfully.
Successfully, in quotes.
I mean, yeah.
He destroys everything.
He kills all the other planes that are there.
Yeah, like the bomb should have gone off.
Yeah, really seriously.
No, the plane should have exploded. It was like one of those engines were hitting other planes.
Yeah.
But it's just like this movie just decided it was just not. It's like, I'm not ready to end yet. I'm just not ready. I'll be in my room. You guys wait out here. So the plane's landing, like, freaking Gandalf shows up, Samwise, Merry and Pippin, they're all doing their little things. Shows Aragorn.
Find out, like, the
They've walked the Mount great, Doom and came back.
They have the walked
great, Mount great grandkids of some of the Ents. We get into their stories.
Yeah, freaking Draco turns into the stars and like
they couldn't have even been bothered.
And harasses
this is before MythBusters when they figured out that like throwing things behind a 747's engine is really cool.
Yeah, super cool.
Couldn't even be bothered to like show that happening.
Like, freaking Hot Rod turns into Rodimus Prime. Like, this whole thing just ends 20,000 times.
And there is no doubt that he's going to land this fucking...
No, because you saw in the beginning, and they set it up from the beginning, and Kurt Russell's name is in the credits. He's not going to... Like, they're not going to have everyone... we're 2 hours and 20-something minutes in. We're not just going to end this with a giant fireball.
Awesome would that have been?
It would have been awesome. But that's not how 90s movies go.
I know.
And so they just land eventually, and it's like, oh, it's...
Yay, we finally get to the point, and everybody gets off, and they're like, oh, we're good, you good, I'm good, yeah, everybody's good, yay.
Yeah. Kurt Russell goes to Halle Berry's like, well, I think we're supposed to hook up. Like,
yeah, you want to
rewrite.
You want to do this?
What happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. I stole your panties. Should we go do something?
You let fat U.S. Marshal dude, he shoots all the guys, right? Mm. Halle Berry lands the plane. They hook up at the end.
Yes.
Credits.
No.
Yes.
After that, though, Cahill, dumbass Cahill, he's like, wow, that was a close one, and takes the straw and puts it back in his mouth.
Because no fucking thing exists. What's funny is he had the straw.
He did have the straw. And it shows the bomb squad pull away.
Well, presumably a professional went on there.
Yeah, I guess it was like, all right, here's how you do this. Yeah. Clip. All right. My neck's not broken. I'm not an idiot. Yeah.
Happy had a competent person to talk to. Also, the bomb wasn't gyrating from turbulence.
I do also like he gives the straw to Kurt Russell, who's just like, what? Yeah. I wasn't there for this shit. I don't know what you're talking about.
I think the bottom line here
is... Here's something that was in my mouth.
This whole movie would have been 45 minutes long if Steven Seagal knew how to make an actual decision.
Like, yeah. For real.
An executive
decision? Yeah, exactly. Well, that's why it's called executive decision, because Steven Seagal got half of his crew executed.
This movie would have been about maybe half an hour long if the guys from Predator were there.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think any of the passengers would have survived.
Not one.
It would have been fine. The moment they got out there with the mini gun.
Yeah, Jesse would have just gotten up there.
Just that scene where they're firing at the jungle. That's just the main cabin. Fucking poncho's fired.
The main
off
cabin, lunch. That's the entire front of the plane. Yeah. Okay. Gone.
Rework this movie. All right. So not the commandos from Predator, but Predator himself on the plane.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing.
All interesting, but I'm going with Fat Marshall saves the day.
Yeah,
and Halle Berry gets a plane.
They hook up at the end. Kurt Russell goes up talk to her, and she goes, nah, I got somebody. Yeah. And then they go off.
Well, he does end up shooting somebody, right? Fat Marshall?
Yeah, we mentioned that. He shoots a couple people, I think, but he gets shot too. So.
I like how John Leguizamo is like down and out when he gets shot in the ass, and then suddenly...
For several minutes until he finally pops up again to take out the main terrorist.
Well, he's probably just playing possum.
I guess. Yeah. He sure waited long enough. Yeah. He waited until after the dude shot the pilots. Like, all right, I guess I better act.
I don't know, maybe he's slowly drawing a gun or something. I don't know.
Had to crawl to it.
Yeah. I can't just take my purple heart and go home. I better do something. Oh, but pretty much it.
Yep, that's executive decision from 1996.
We got a bad Frank Sinatra song at the end or something.
Oh, man, like we sure do.
All right, so on Rotten Tomatoes, critics gave this a score of 63%. Audience gave it a score of 53%. Citing such things as a movie for people who are sophisticated enough to know how shameless the film is, but fun-loving enough to enjoy its excess and manic zeals. It's Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times.
Manic zeal?
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't write it.
Did he write that about a different movie? Just, get it mixed up when he was posting it?
Maybe. There's nothing like a protracted action drama in which an anti-terrorist commando slinks around the bowels of an airport or airbound 747 and talk about what they hope to accomplish upstairs in the final shootout. So this is Mike Clark of USA Today. And for uncomplicated excitement, the film offers a solid 130 minutes. Is James Bernard and Helly of Real House.
What?
I think that's the point.
Did you say uncomplicated?
Yep. It's not complicated action when it's action. Just a whole lot of nothing in between. So, anyway, that's what they said about this movie. What are your personal thoughts on it, Brian?
So, we have watched worse movies before. We will watch worse movies after this. It's not god-awful, but it wasn't very good to me. Like, there's enough in the movie worth checking out if you're not, like, if you have it on in the background, which we seem to watch a bunch of those background kind of movies. We do. Like, but I wouldn't go looking for this movie to, like, as a release from something, it'd be like, oh, it's on. Okay. And like, I would leave it just because you can see like Seagal get sucked on a plane. That's about it though. It's 2.5 hours of nonsense. Like, I wouldn't want to subject someone to that unless, like, they had, like, if you're, like, reading a book, you want something in the background, there's some noise in the background, something like that, that's fine. But other than that, I wouldn't recommend this.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Rob.
You know, I'm going to actually recommend this. And the reason is because this is a very good, like, rainy afternoon kind of movie. Like, you just put it on and watch it. It goes on too long. Like, the ending is ridiculous. I was begging for this movie to end. Right. By the time Kurt Russell's like jumped in the pilot seat, I was like, please just end. Please just end. And it refused to. I had to pee so bad. But I mean, if you're in a situation where you can like stop and take a pee break and whatever, yeah, it's totally fine. It's fun enough. It's got enough going on that like it keeps you kind of engaged for the majority. So yeah, I'm gonna recommend it. It's fun. Why not?
Okay, Joe.
I like this movie. I think this is the opposite of what we usually watch, though, in that I think this is better when you watch it alone and are totally concentrating on it rather than watch it with a group and are talking. That being said, though, I do, while watching it, it made me want to watch either Predator for just the crazy action or The Hunt for Red October for the better, like, suspense stuff. So it's not, like, a high recommend, but I did enjoy it. And, like, for a movie that's 2 hours plus, I think it goes by pretty quick when you're really into it. But
unless you have to pee.
Yeah, this has to be something that you're into. But the landing the plane scene is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that's canceled out by Steven Seagal getting sucked out of an airlock.
Okay.
You know, so yeah, recommend.
Yeah, for me, it's also a late recommend. Again, this movie is harmless. It's certainly nothing I would tell you need to stay away from, like a Garbage Pail Kids or something like that. I don't know. I didn't try watching it alone this time, so I can't say if that makes it better or worse. But it seems like this would be a good, you know, hangover movie, whatever, lazy Sunday kind of thing. But yeah, it's just, it was so, it needs editing. It just really needs editing. Because like you said, it straddles that line between not really being that suspenseful and not really being that action filled. So there's just a lot of like stuff in the middle where, you know, we need to pick up the pace because it was putting me to sleep, literally. So it's just a light recommend.
I mean, all right, look. So far, everyone's pointed out how watching this movie has made them think about watching better movies.
Yeah.
Just watch the better movies.
Well, yeah. That's why I'm saying, like, this isn't one that I would seek out. But
yeah.
It's one that if it was on, I would totally watch.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, like, I'd rather watch, go to YouTube and look for an hour and a half long Steven Seagal mashup and just watch that.
Have you ever tried that?
Is it possible?
It's real hard to do.
Really?
No, like, just... I don't know. Steven Seagal, I can only take him for so
just
long.
An hour and a half of like, I mean, all the clips from his movies.
Other than Executive Decision because of Tommy Lee Jones, Gary Busey, and a fucking Battleship. That's the only like, uh-huh. Not Executive Decision, Under Siege.
Okay.
That's the only Steven Seagal movie that I can tolerate.
That's fair.
Yeah.
And we pointed this out earlier, but we're kind of surprised that this is Steven Seagal's first appearance on this podcast. I'm sure we will see him again at some point.
As far as my original claim, though, was it better than Delta Force?
Absolutely. Oh, God, yes.
Yeah,
definitely.
How is this David Suchet's second appearance on the podcast and Steven Seagal's first?
I couldn't tell you. The roll of the die, I guess. The die gods have chosen.
D20 of fate.
Yeah. Plus, we have like 300 more movies on the list, so.
Yeah.
Well. The fact that anyone has more than one appearance is actually
weird.
A big thing.
It's weird.
How big our list is.
There's some of us that are on like 4 or 5 now.
Right? Yeah.
Some of those.
Yeah.
Like John Hurt's getting up there.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, he's gotta take a chill being on this show.
But, this movie just, yeah, that crash landing scene.
But that airlock scene.
Yeah. So, do you think that's how this plane crashed on the middle of Purgatory with Scott Wolf and all that?
Did the Langoliers come out?
Or, sorry, Matthew Fox, I mean.
Scary little girl!
Because yeah, it's Flight Oceanic.
And Balky. Balky.
Okay.
Balky Bartaku Moose.
Yeah.
It would have been cool if at the end of this movie, like, Seagal walks over to him like, he did good.
Yeah, like, he's just waiting at the end of the movie.
If he's a force ghost.
Oh, or if he just splats on the fucking windshield.
I was gonna say the whole time he was just hanging off that back wing of the plane.
That kind of would have been awesome. Captain, he just shows up like, I got you. Oh, you already did.
Captain, there's a Steven Seagal on the wing of the plane.
Would it have been better if, like, right when Kurt Russell jumped into controls, it just the next scene, the plane's on the ground, he's like, oh, that was a close one.
Yes. You know what? I would have dealt with the plane landing if it was at least the first runway.
Yeah, I was going to say, if it was even the first runway, I would have.
Because the whole going through the flaps and then landing gear, all the flaps, it just played off like a Three Stooges gag.
I will give them this, though. I was worried when he mentioned the highway that he was going to try and land it on there.
Yeah, no, I had that thought, too. I was like,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I will say, a lot of the stuff in this movie was also ruined by Mythbusters with, planes don't explosively decompress when you shoot a hole in the wall.
No.
And, like, you can just tell the autopilot to land the plane and it will.
It just will.
I mean, granted, you could say that Hassan
dude shot it.
Yeah, normally that's just how that works.
But anyway, that's executive decision. Let's move on to other things. What do we have up next week, Brian?
So it's that time of year that we do our Christmas special. Christmas is coming up. So when this episode comes out, it'll be almost Christmas. So we're going to do an old favorite, Scrooged.
All right.
Yeah.
Continuing on with the holiday classics.
This will be Bill Murray's first appearance on the show.
I know why, because it tends to be in awesome ass movies.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, he's not in a whole lot, and the stuff that he's in tends to be pretty decent.
Yeah.
Pretty high end shit there.
Kind of hard to make fun of awesome movies.
Yeah.
Feeling a little emotional here, guys. This is going to be our second annual Christmas episode.
Yeah.
It really is.
It is.
Yeah.
Yes.
2 years. Over 2 years now we've been doing it.
Over a year.
Well, I can't count.
Two Christmases.
Christmases. Over two Christmases. That. And that's the thing. All right. So, next week for Scrooge. Join us for that. What else do we have, Rob?
Well, in the meantime, guys, if you want to tell us all of your favorite stories about how you landed a plane in an emergency situation, you can email us at the4ampodcast@gmail.com. That's the4ampodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter @4ampodcast. Do it. Stop thinking about it.
Just do it.
It's not hard. We won't.
Said tomorrow yesterday. Do it.
I'm not.
Three, two, one. Now. Do it. Now.
I'm
now.
Not.
Do it. Do it. Now.
I'm not going to spam your email. I mean, I will if you want. If you want to see all my tattoos, just let me know. I'll send those out.
You don't want to see all of his tattoos.
Yeah, you do.
Feel free to send in submissions of what you think his tattoo should be.
Yes,
please. Draw them out.
Yes, please. Do that. I would love to see that. We'll put them up on our Facebook. The winner, the coolest ones we put on our Facebook page. The most inappropriate ones I will
keep. He means the ones that will actually submit.
I will keep on my phone. For myself.
For when you actually go to get a tattoo.
I just thought of a great analog to this movie that you can do. You can't get a hold of this movie. Just play Microsoft Flight Simulator for an hour, right? Just fly a plane around and think really hard about how you want to make a sandwich. And then just keep coming up with different plans for the sandwich. And then real quick, just go make that sandwich. And then land the plane. And that's this movie.
You don't even have to land it well.
Yeah.
So apparently Microsoft Sandwich Simulator 2016.
Do play that in a different window while playing the flight simulator.
Is that actually a game yet?
It is now. Start coding.
Right away. We got Surgeon Simulator and I Am Bread. Let's fuse those together
to
make this happen.
But that's going to do it this week, guys. Thank you so much.
Deuces.
Adios.
Good night, everybody. Bye.